Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark.
The haunted apartment. Me and my husband at the time and my two sons were renting this apartment, and it needed a lot of work when we moved in, but that's what my husband did for a living, remodel apartments. We had no problem in the beginning until we were almost done remodeling, then it all started. The front door gave us such a hard time trying to open it. He and I literally slammed our bodies into the door together while turning the knob. Finally, after a while, it opened. So we decided to use the back door, even though the front would have been more convenient. One day, all four of us were sitting in the living room near that door, which had been locked, opened all by itself. Then around 8 or 9 p.m., my husband ran to the laundromat while I stayed with the kids, who were 2 and 7 years old. I stayed home painting. I heard the doorknob jiggle. I almost ran to let him in. If it was him, he would open it. I heard a woman's voice, as if she were talking to a little girl, say, "Hello." I ran into the kids' room and slammed the door behind me, grabbed a baseball bat. My eldest son said, "All right, Mom," but I was scared. I could hear, outside that bedroom door that I ran into, men's big black shoes pacing back and forth outside the bedroom door. It was picking up the nails that my husband threw into an old roller tray for painting. Nails being picked up and dropped over and over again. I ran out into the hallway, the one we could use with the kids until he came home. I heard a lady say, "Hi," in my ear while walking across my kitchen. The people from downstairs kept coming up all the time saying they couldn't stand the noise anymore. It sounded like bodies were being thrown to the floor and banging coming up from our apartment. And we weren't even making any noises. The toilet and sink filled up with black water, overflowing. A bathroom light would turn on and off. Another time it just turned on after I had just shut it off. I walked a couple of feet away, turned my head, and it was back on. One day, as I was walking by the kitchen cabinets, they would click open with every step, one per step. Then we had bugs coming into the house, rats and slugs all over the steps. We would find them when we came home, and one day I thought I had heard a bat. I don't understand why I thought it was a bat that was in the house. I got so frightened that I turned and ran right into my husband. I took him down. He was holding his face. He was in a fetal position, face down on the floor, not moving. I had accidentally taken him off his feet while I was running. I just didn't see him. He hit his ribs on the edge of a thick wooden end board, and he cracked them. Because I thought I could swear that there was a bat that was flying right in my face. That night we had to go to a hotel because I just wouldn't stay in that house thinking that there was a bat in there. Needless to say, eventually we never did find a bat, and we couldn't have thought of how any bat could have gone into the house to begin with. Well, what ended up happening, of course, was that after all that work, we sold that place as soon as possible. And hopefully sold whatever was in there with it. The shadow in the cornfield. I was about 9 at the time, and I was just being slowly allowed to go where I wanted in the small village where I lived. Me and my friends would spend our summer holidays going to new places that it seemed no one had been to. It seemed adventurous, but of course, we were only going about 4 miles away from home to where farmers would regularly throw us off their land and threaten us with police. They never did do anything. Even if we were caught again and again. We would also take my husky named Wolfie. He was our bodyguard, I suppose. We were wandering around the outskirts of the village looking for somewhere to go. We had pretty much been everywhere when we came across this path. It wasn't like the path appeared magically, but we had just never seen it before. At the beginning, it looked kind of boring, just an old road with a few bushes and a house about a quarter of the way down. To be honest, it was really boring. It was just field full of junk. We had fun in it for about half an hour. After about 2 hours, we came across this cornfield. It was such a relief. It was great. The corn was taller than our heads and had a warm, comforting glow about it. We decided to have a game of hide and seek, which I suggested because I could cheat by using the dog. After about 4 games, I was a seeker and I was traveling through the vast amounts of corn, using Wolfie to track them down. He would sniff his way there and bark once we were there. He was pulling me towards the prize when he froze and began to whimper. I had never seen him like this. He was running behind me and barking and crying. It scared the hell out of me. Suddenly, it went freezing cold. The temperature was about 20 degrees below where it had been before, and there I was, shivering like a leaf. A black figure swooped past me in the next row of corn. Wolfie pulled with all his might in the other direction, yanking me to the floor. He pulled free of his collar and ran off. I lay dazed on the floor, oblivious of what had just happened, when I heard Clark, one of the three friends I had with me that day, who was also my best friend. I heard him scream. I shot up and followed the noise. When I got there, he was on the floor, shaking, rocking backwards and forwards like a madman. I didn't dare approach him. He was freaking me out. At this time, he still hadn't noticed I was there until I shouted for my other friends. He then turned around and shouted for me to stay away and picked up a rock and threw it at me, cutting my head open. More than anything, I was shocked. It didn't hurt, but I guess that was the shock. I just turned around and ran. I don't know what I was thinking. About halfway through, I saw my other friends holding Wolfie. They put his collar back on and also his leash. I grabbed a hold of Wolfie and I told my other friends to run, and that's exactly what I did. I set off running again. Usually I was the slowest runner of my friends, but I was miles in front of them. I ran for what felt like an hour when I finally got out of that long path. I collapsed on the pavement out of breath with Wolfie nuzzling his head into me, also panting desperately. My other two friends followed shortly, but without Clark. We sat on the pavement for 2 hours waiting for Clark. By this time, my face was a crusty red scab with red hand smears. Then we saw a staggering figure stumble out onto the road. It was Clark. His face was torn to shreds, as were his clothes. I ran towards him, yet again he shouted at me to stay away. So my other friend asked what was wrong. He answered to her that a man in the field had told them that I would be the cause of the death of someone close to him, and that a woman dressed in rags had attacked him. We never spoke to Clark after that. He became just another face, but his mom and my mom were friends, and they would regularly meet up at my house. And this one time when Clark's mom was at my house, I was outside messing about on my bike. She was just getting in her car to go home when a car flew around the corner and sped towards me. She ran up, pushed me out of the way, but sadly she was hit and died 2 days later in intensive care. 2 years later at school, I was in the toilet throwing up when Clark burst in and grabbed me by my hair, dragged me across the floor and banged my head on the floor several times, shouting he had said it would happen. A friend of mine that had been with us on that day burst in and grabbed him off me and restrained him while I picked myself up off the floor. I ran and got help. After that, we never saw Clark again. He moved away the next day. That's why he had done it on that day. The last I ever heard of him, he had moved to Texas and tried to kill himself but failed. To this day, I miss Clark, and I will never go in that field ever again, because I know that whatever is there is pure evil. The Haunted Farmhouse. In 1982, I was doing some carpentry work for a farmer in South Dakota. It was on a house that had been moved from town to his farm about 6 miles outside of town. Almost as soon as I started on it, I noticed things occurring that I could not explain. I would be working in a room and go to get some materials, and the lights would be off when I returned, and lights would be on in rooms where I had not been. I worked there for several days, and these things kept going on. On the fourth day, I was working in the kitchen, putting up paneling, and I had a ladder sitting in the middle of the room, with a box of panel nails sitting on the painted shelf of the ladder. Suddenly, the ladder started sliding across the floor, and it tipped over, spilling the nails all over the floor. I could smell jasmine perfume very strongly. The room had gotten very cold, and it was 90 degrees outside. I had not felt the house shaking, nor were there any trucks going by. I picked up the ladder and got down on my hands and knees, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw a shadow moving from the bathroom into the bedroom. Then I heard the stairs squeak, and I got up and went to the stairs to the upstairs bedrooms. I could see no one there, so I went up the stairs and looked through the bedrooms, but I could find no one there as well. I went back downstairs and finished picking up the nails. A few minutes later, the farmer came in to see how I was doing. I told him about the strange things that had been going on, and he started laughing. He said, "You just met our ghost." And then he told me a story about the house and why it was moved. He said the house was originally in town and the old woman that lived in the house had killed herself by hanging herself in the basement. He took me to the basement and showed me the beam that she had hung herself from and where the neighbors found her. No one had been able to live in the house since she had died, as they could not handle the pranks she would pull on them. We went back upstairs and he told me that she had never been violent, just that she liked to turn lights on and off and move things around. He told me to talk to her and she would leave me alone. Then he told me that when they moved the house, they thought the ghost would stay in town, but she did not, and now he was stuck with her. As he left, he said that she would not harm me, but she would continue moving things around and turning the lights off and on. I continued to work on the house, and a few days later, I finished the kitchen. I saw her shadow in the bedroom looking towards me, and I said, "I hope you enjoy your new kitchen." I was there for almost a week after that, and I did not have any more problems with the lights or anything else. When the job was done and I had moved on to other work, I talked to the farmer several times, and he told me that the old lady was not bothering the people that were currently living in the house. He had no explanation as to why. Believe me, this scared the heck out of me, and I hoped I would never have this type of experience again. But as time went on, I realized that that was not my last encounter with the paranormal. The Shadow of the Man. In 1988, my second wife and I were living in a house that I had bought from my brother and his wife. Her first husband had committed suicide by shooting himself in the master bedroom, and she could not stand to live in the house. They had been renting it out until they moved out of state, and I bought it from them. Things went pretty good for a while, then we started having problems with his ghost. Several times my wife said that she saw a figure of a man standing in our bedroom in the middle of the night. Then we started having things moved around that we could not explain. If we put something down in the living room and were out of the room for a few minutes, when we came back, the object would be moved to a new table or it would be on the floor. One night we were sitting in the living room watching TV, and all of a sudden, the TV in the basement came on at full volume. I went running downstairs to see if we had someone in our basement, as my wife and I were the only ones living in the house. When I got downstairs, I shut off the TV, and I looked all over the basement, but could find no one. This happened several more times, and I finally unplugged the TV from the wall. I had only been back upstairs a few minutes, and the TV came back on at full volume. I went back downstairs, and I moved the TV to the middle of the room after I unplugged it again. My wife was scared to death that this ghost was going to harm us, and she wanted to sell the house and move somewhere else. I told her we would have my parents, who were ministers, come down and do an exorcism on the house and see if we could get rid of our unwanted guests. So I called my folks and explained what had been going on and that my wife wanted to move out, and I asked them if they would come down and see if they could get our unwanted guests to leave. They said they would be right down. My parents came to the house and they started praying in all the rooms and blessing each room with holy water. They moved from room to room until they had been in every room in the house, and they also did the garage. We lived in the house for 6 more years and never had any more problems with our unwanted guest. Then all of a sudden, my wife started seeing black demons calling her to the dark side, and I ended up putting her in the hospital as she was wanting to commit suicide. The doctor said she was paranoid and a manic depressive and was having delusions. He kept her in the hospital overnight on suicide watch and put her on medications. When she got home, she got better each day, and for a few months, things were fine. Then the real problem started, as she went off her medications and did not tell me. She thought she was well and did not need them anymore. She would fly off the handle at the drop of a hat and throw things at me. She got upset with me because I did not get a box taken to the basement as fast as she wanted me to. As I walked out the front door and towards the gate going into the front yard, she threw a large mug of iced tea at me and it ticked my ear just before crashing into the iron gatepost and shattered all over the driveway. A few days later, she got upset with me in the kitchen and she threw a cast iron skillet at me. I ducked and it went through the sheetrock. I repaired the hole, and 2 days later, as I was going to the basement, she yelled at me to wait and take something to the basement for her. I had already taken the first step down. She kicked me in my backside and I fell down the stairs, hitting the wall at the bottom real hard. I did not have any major injuries, but I decided that this was the last straw. I told her I was moving out until she went back on her medications, and she started yelling at me in a man's voice. It was then that I figured out that she had been possessed by our unwanted guest. She refused to have an exorcism done on her, and we ended up getting a divorce. She tried killing her new boyfriend about a year later by shoving him out of the driver's door as he drove them down a road. She now lives by herself and refuses help from anyone. This was not the way I wanted our relationship to end, but she would not let me help her. She still lives in the house, and I'm sure that the unwanted guest is back, or at least is still inside of her. She won't talk to me, so I really don't know for sure. The only thing I do know is that she is in the grip of the dark side. When your dead friend calls. On October 15, 3 years ago, I and two friends drove to Idaho so that I could have open heart surgery. I needed to have four bypasses done as my arteries were 90% plugged. When we arrived in Boise, we had to find a motel room to stay in overnight, as I had to be at the hospital at 6 a.m. the next morning. My mother and brother were also going to be there, but they would arrive a couple of hours later. We found a motel and checked in. We went to the room and took in our things for the night. We were sitting in the room for about 20 minutes when the phone rang and my care provider answered it. She got a funny look on her face and then she said the phone call was for me. No one knew where we were staying at, as I had not contacted anyone to let them know where we were staying. I took the phone and a Spanish-sounding voice on the other end asked if this was me. I said yes, and he told me, "Don't have your surgery tomorrow. It's not your turn to die." I was floored. No one that I knew I was to have my surgery had been contacted. I asked, "Who is this?" And he said, "It's Oscar." The only person I knew by that name had died the year before of cancer. I had worked with him at the factory, and he would stop every shift and talk to me. In the background, I could hear hundreds of voices, and I asked him where he was at, and he said, "I am in between heaven and earth." Then he told me again not to have my surgery, as it was not my turn to die, and the connection went dead. I could hardly believe this had happened, and I told my friends about the phone call. I called my brother and told him about the call. They were still about an hour away from Boise. He knew this friend as he had worked at the same factory as we did. He told me that I had better take the call seriously and they would see us in a little while and we would go eat. We discussed the phone call over dinner. My mother and brother both agreed that I had better talk to my doctor about it, at least about my concern. The next morning, we went to the hospital just before 6 a.m. and they started getting me ready. I asked to see my doctor and they told me he would be there in a few minutes. I looked through the door a few minutes later and he was pacing back and forth in tight circles in front of my door. Then he came in and before I could tell him what had happened, he said that my surgery had been postponed for a week and that the head doctor of the department would be in to see me in a few minutes. When the other doctor came in, he told me that the doctor that was scheduled to do the surgery had lost the last three patients he had and they were all from my area. He had rescheduled my surgery for 1 week later and that he would be doing the surgery. 1 week later, I had the surgery and went through it without any problems. I thank God that he allows our friends to warn us when it's not our turn to die. I also thank God for giving me a second chance and for giving us friends that care enough to change the future, even from the afterlife. The Unknown Soldier. I work at Camp Roberts in California. There's a base there that was built in the 1940s, used for basic training. The base was built in a matter of weeks and still stands to this day, even though as of 2012, they started to demolish some of the barracks that date back to World War II. On this base, there used to be a full functioning hospital in the 200-300 block. Nine buildings that still stand from that grand hospital, eight of the nine are in a locked gated area. These buildings take about 2 minutes to walk from one side of the building to the other. The buildings were at one time connected by covered wooden walkways that have since been taken down. Only one still shows evidence of these walkways, Building 308. They took out the walkway and made steps and put in soda machines on the old platform. All the buildings have entrances on the end. Only in Buildings 303 and 304 is the building not built like one giant hallway. One night, as always, my co-worker and I had to lock up. But on this night, we worked late and it was already dark. We had to go into each building and make sure that both doors were locked. I had Building 307 and 305. He took 308 and 315. I locked up 305 and went on to 307. After that, I went on and entered what's called the center of the compound. I saw my friend on the platform of Building 308 heading towards 315. I went towards the building to tell him to hurry up. Mind you, Building 307 and 305 are like 20 feet from each other. He disappeared from my view behind the soda machines. I walked up to the platform, but no one was there. All that was there was just open space. You would be able to see anyone get down the other set of stairs. I ran over to Building 315 to see him walking back from the other end of the building. That's when I realized that the person I saw wasn't him, and that there is no way that anyone else could be in the compound because it's gated and locked. When he walked out of the building, he looked at me and asked what was wrong. I told him that we needed to leave now. As we walked back, I told him what happened, and he laughed at me. We worked there for 6 months. Nothing had ever happened like that before. We started to turn off lights one day, and we were at Building 303, since that was the last building left to lock up. He clipped off the light switch and then walked to the other wall to turn off the other half of the lights, and the switch to the other sets of lights turned back on. These were the ones that he had just turned off only a few seconds before. I looked at him and said, "Told you so, let's go." He ran to the other side of the building to turn off the sets of lights that had just turned on, and we ran out of the building. Our boss doesn't believe that those buildings or any other on Camp Roberts is haunted. But me and my co-worker think that's why our boss always goes home before dark. I found out after telling this story to one of the guys on our base that have been here forever that the hospital was full of people from the war, that they were there to recuperate from war injuries or diseases they had caught. They were also boot camp trainees and Italian POWs housed at Camp Roberts. The 300 block, though, was the death prep area. A haunting in Tennessee. I'm a 50-year-old grandmother. My sanity has never been questioned, not to my face anyway. My folks settled in the foothills of the Cumberland Mountains in Tennessee, and we have what might be described as a very country way of speaking. Ghosts or haunts are hants to us. Around here, the word such is sometimes pronounced sitch. One winter night when I was about 7 years old, I was at my aunt's house. The adults were in the living room, sitting around the fireplace talking. We kids, my brother, our cousins, and me, were scampering all over the place, playing hide-and-seek, raising the occasional ruckus, and generally having fun. I was hiding in an old wardrobe when I noticed that the grown-ups had lowered their voices. I jumped out of the wardrobe and, for optimum listening purposes, scuttled behind a bedroom door. They were telling ghost stories. One particularly chilling story involved an abandoned house. It was said that in this house, at a certain time of year, one could hear a baby crying just before midnight, that on the stroke of the hour itself, a coffin containing a baby would appear in the parlor. I marched into the living room. "Is that true?" I demanded. "About the baby in the casket?" The grown-ups sat there a moment, looking at each other. Then Auntie reached for my hand and pulled me over to stand beside her chair. "Honey, we're just sitting around, telling a bunch of old stories. Just passing time is all," she said. "Now, some parts you heard might be true." Before I had time to wonder which part she was talking about, Auntie, looking me straight in the eye, declared, "But there ain't no such thing as a ghost." I took her words to heart. They echoed authoritatively throughout several decades of my life. Many of my childhood friends believed in ghosts. They wouldn't go near a cemetery unless they had to, fearing a hant would get them if they did. Smugly secure my belief that there ain't no such thing as a ghost, I took shortcuts through graveyards whenever it was convenient, day or night. Later on, when my daughter wanted a Ouija board, I got her one. There ain't no such thing as a ghost, so why should she have one of those Ouija toys to play with? For some 40-odd years, I lived a happy, hant-free life, but not anymore. I recently worked for a gentleman who sold repossessed mobile homes. On the lot one morning, Bill, a co-worker, called me on the radio and summoned me to number 087, a newly arrived double-wide. I climbed up inside it. "Bill, you in here?" "In the master bath," came Bill's reply. He was standing in front of the tub with a sour look on his face. I walked in and then backed right out. The bathroom stank to high heaven. There were mounds of dead flies on the windowsill and on the floor behind the toilet. "Where's it coming from?" I asked. Bill shook his head. "I don't know, but we'll have to find out. Ain't nobody going to buy a trailer with a bathroom that stinks like this." Over the next several days, Bill and I, along with three others, worked in number 087. We searched high and low for the source of that stench. We removed wall panels and examined the hidden interior room that housed the furnace and water heater. We poked around between the vapor barrier and flooring. We flushed the drain traps. At one point, in fits of desperation, we even peeled back the bathroom carpet and padding. We found no evidence of any leaks, no dead vermin, nothing. In the course of these events, we noticed some odd things about the odor. For one thing, it was sporadic. Whenever it showed up, piles of dead flies showed up with it. The smell would dissipate, but the flies stayed behind. We had to suck them up with a hand vac. Also, the odor was strong, almost overpowering, inside the bathroom. One step outside the bathroom door, though, the smell was undetectable. Now, I've watched the same movies everyone else has watched, and I know that, confronted with the same circumstance, a lot of people would have been immediately clued in that some sort of spook was fiddle-farting around. Not I, though. Ain't no such thing as a hat. As a matter of fact, one of the guys did say something about number 087 being possessed instead of repossessed. But he was joking. As far as I know, that's the only allusion to the supernatural that any of us made. We opened windows, we sprayed disinfectant, and set out air fresheners. We burned scented candles and incense. If it smelled good, we tried it. Finally, 3 days passed with no odor presenting itself, and we thought we had cured it. Maybe we did. On a hot, very busy day in September, I climbed inside of number 087 to get started on one final job that had to be done before the home would be ready to sell. A sheet of drywall in the dining area needed to be replaced. I was measuring the wall when the toilet in the master bathroom flushed. I nearly lost my religion right then and there. Here I was in a sweltering, airless trailer, sweat pouring off me, and some idiot, probably a prospective buyer, had just used a toilet that wasn't hooked to a sewage system. It was not unusual for these used mobile homes to arrive on the lot with enough water for a flush retained in their lavatory tanks. And despite taped-down lids and do-not-use signs, people sometimes did avail themselves of the facilities. I dropped my tape measure and went stomping off towards the bathroom. On the way down the warpath, it didn't dawn on me that until I entered it, this trailer had been locked. The bathroom door was standing wide open. The pig hadn't even bothered to close it. He was standing right there in front of the throne, hitching up his pants with his right side facing me. He was tall, had a beer gut, and a mop of tangled red hair. He had on jeans and a gray muscle shirt that looked as though I had seldom seen the inside of a washing machine. His pudgy arms were covered with jailhouse tattoos. One was a pair of dice rolled to snake eyes. I remembered wondering why he hadn't opted for boxcars. Attached to his belt, there was a leather sheath with what appeared to be a 6-inch boot knife in it. Sir? He went from pig to sir in the span of a heartbeat. A sight like that will just naturally take the wind out of your sails. Judging from the look on his face, he was surprised to see me, which was puzzling, because he had to have heard my approach. As we stared at each other, his expression changed. Becoming sullen, I perceived a threat. He lowered his head slightly, still watching me. His right hand reached for that blade. Then he clicked off. He just wasn't there anymore. It made me dizzy. Either I had just witnessed a ghost, or I had a horribly defective mind. You didn't even wash your hands. I had said that out loud. Hastily departed and took a break outside, wondering how I was going to get that Ouija board away from my daughter. I decided to do what all parents do whenever a child acquires something she's better off without. I'd buy something bigger, better, and more expensive, and attempt to negotiate a trade. I thought about my childhood jaunts through the local cemeteries. No telling what kind of boogers had been lurking in the shadows back then, just waiting to pounce on my unsuspecting self. I saw the apparition only once, and I never smelled the foul odor again. The last time I was inside number 087, the whole trailer smelled like a smoked coconut, thanks to our dedicated freshening efforts. Shortly after all this happened, my employer had a heart attack. Not haunt-related, as far as I know. Resulting health issues forced him to sell his inventory, including number 087, to the other dealers around the region. It's an attractive mobile home, so it's reasonable to assume someone has bought it by now. It's a 96 model, 28 by 48, with 3 bedrooms and 2 baths. It has beige siding. All the front windows, including a large and very lovely bay window, are trimmed with red shutters. There's a rectangular skylight in the kitchen. The ceiling in the dining area has a framed mirror with a swag light dangling from it. An identical mirror, sans light, is mounted to the wall behind the pastel yellow garden tub in the master bath. If this sounds like your home, you might want to arm yourself before going to the bathroom, or at least knock before you go, because there is such a thing as a hand, and you just might be living with one.